Welcome to Sustainable Sessions, hosted by yours truly, Lucas and Lauren. Episode 1. Today our guest is Robert McLemon.
I'm Robert McLemon. I'm a professor of geography and environmental studies at Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo, Canada.
All right. Thank you for joining us today for our first podcast with Sustainable Sessions with Last 20. So we'll start with our first discussion topic.
Sure. So with all the different facets of climate change, so it's a really cumbersome topic. So it covers everything from plastic pollution to air pollution to composting and stuff in between. What niche of the climate crisis are you most interested in as of right now, or do you find, or you're more passionate about? And can you just speak a little bit to that niche?
Sure. Well, a lot of my research has to do with what happens to people when they experience extreme climate events. Do they get displaced? Do they move? Do they stay in place? And if so, how do they adapt? So a lot of my research in recent years, for example, has looked at things like drought and its impact on rural communities, both here in North America, but elsewhere in the world, and how do those impacts translate into population change? So for example, sometimes you get an extreme event and people move away from the crisis and resettle elsewhere, but in other cases, they may not. And so what are the factors that go into determining whether people stay or go when they experience a drought or an extreme storm or a flood or something like that?
Awesome. No, and that's great too. I was saying to Lauren kind of before we got into this, so like, and just, I don't know if we shared at all kind of what our business is about, but our company Last 20, we primarily focus on the plastic crisis. So we make clothing that's made from sustainable materials. So 8 water bottles are in each of the shirts that we make. And then our main operation is, we call it Last 20 Upcycle. And its primary goal is to make plastic pavement, or it uses recycled plastic waste as a supplement to bitumen in the traditional pavement structure. So that's very interesting to hear, and definitely something that we're doing this as an opportunity to explore more different topics and learn more about the climate change problem from a holistic view. So that's really interesting to hear.
I think kind of just a follow-up question to your research, is there one particular study that you did that was like the most interesting or that you want to like talk about a little bit more?
Well, I guess I'll talk about one of my more recent ones. So for example, a group of colleagues and I, we are doing computer models of the North American Great Plains. So that'd be the region from north of Edmonton all the way down to South Texas. And so historically, there's been a lot of droughts over the course of the last, well, it's just a common feature on that in that part of the world. And what we've been looking at is over the last 50 years or so, how have droughts influence the growth or decline of rural populations. So we just finished off a little project related to that, looking at a drought in 1976 that affected rural eastern South Dakota. May not sound too exciting for some people, especially if you've never been to South Dakota, but it's an example of a system, a rural area farming system that had been sustainable for decades. But this one drought that sort of came out of nowhere was extremely damaging to farmers' incomes. It triggered a lot of changes in the community. And there's a lot of lessons that you can learn from those types of case studies. And so those are the things, that's something that I've been really interested in lately. Maybe your listeners may not be so excited by it. I've also published stuff on, you know, bigger issues like, how climate change is affecting global migration flows. So people moving from Central America to the United States, or people moving from the Middle East into Europe. But these topics get a lot of press anyhow, and have a lot of sort of, you know, the public knows a lot about them. So I kind of like sometimes looking at some of the lesser known events that have occurred and sort of what lessons we can learn from those.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, that's really awesome. That's really interesting to hear too. And yeah, like you said too, maybe droughts aren't really the number one topic at some points too, but I think in the upcoming years, as we've seen, there have been a lot of increased droughts across the world. So I think that, again, it's awesome that you're doing this research, and definitely a field that will definitely get more attention as things kind of grow as well.
And we'll,
too.
We'll yeah. even try to highlight some stuff on our social following platforms to teach our users and consumers yeah. about that topic also.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That'd be great. Yeah. I mean, droughts are expected to increase here in North America, especially Western North America. It's expected by the end of the century, there'll be anywhere up to, you know, a 500% increase in the you know, in the frequency or occurrence of droughts in Western North America and many parts of the world as well. You know, extreme storm events like hurricanes and typhoons and so on, they're expected to happen more frequently. If you recall the big storm that hit the Bahamas last year, Hurricane Dorian, which was a Category 5 storm and wiped out tens of thousands of homes in the Bahamas, that sort of event's going to become more common in many parts of the world. And of course, floods are an ongoing hazard. Just 2 weeks ago, there was a big flood in Fort McMurray, Alberta, probably not linked to climate change, but nonetheless, it's a community, Fort McMurray, where they've had the flood. They had an extreme wildfire that burned through there a few years ago. They've had a lot of weather-related disasters, and these sorts of things are going to become more common in the future. So it is great to raise awareness of these things.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. So to kind of build on that and just keep the flow going a little bit, obviously it seems like this is definitely your niche, and you kind of, I can see the combination between geography and climate change coming together there. So how did you kind of get into this educational background and want to decide to become a professor, and what kind of motivated you to get to where you're at right now?
I'll give you a short answer, even though the real answer is a bit longer. When I graduated from university with a bachelor's degree in geography, my first job was actually with the Canadian Foreign Service. So I worked at Canadian embassies from 1990 until about 2002 in places like the former Yugoslavia, India, Hong Kong, the United States, and Austria. And in 2002, I decided to go back to school. And so I finished my PhD in geography. And by that point in time, I'd lived in a number of different parts of the world, and I'd been exposed to a lot of concerns in different areas about the impacts of climate change. So, for example, living and working in Hong Kong, much of downtown Hong Kong, it's an area just simply known as Central, is built on reclaimed land right at sea level. And so rising sea levels obviously are of concern to the people who live there. It's also a city that gets hit by extreme storms quite often. And so any changes in the frequency of they call them typhoons in that part of the world, any increase in the frequency or intensity of those would have impacts for millions of people. So I was already exposed to those sorts of ideas from living abroad. And then when I came back to Canada in 2002, I decided to focus very closely on these population impacts of climate change. I then got a job at the University of Ottawa. I was teaching first year environmental studies, but also researching how climate change was affecting rural communities here in Canada. And my research has sort of grown from there. And I moved on from the University of Ottawa to Laurier about 7 years ago and continued my work there.
Nice. No, it's a very interesting story too. And I think it really speaks to like your exposure to other parts of the world and how that kind of came together to give you a more like holistic view of the climate change problem, how it's impacting all parts of the world. I think that's something that as you kind of travel and see more parts of the world, you really start to notice that it's not just impacting us in this particular region, and you start to see how it impacts regions differently. So it's really interesting. It's a great story to share for the listeners. Do you want to read the next one?
So I was actually in your environmental studies class, and I think I learned a lot of interesting things, and it made me really happy to know that there are professors like you out there that want to get this message out to students. What for you do you want students usually to take away from your class? What's kind of something that you think should hit home for a lot of students?
Well, I've been teaching first year environmental studies for more than a decade now at two different universities. And one of the things I find is that students come to university with a mixed experience. Some students have come from high schools or from households where they're really engaged with climate change or environmental issues more generally, and other students haven't. And so their first year environmental studies class is their first exposure, and it sort of opens their eyes to a lot of these issues. And I try to make it more of a global view of things because, you know, here in Canada, we don't really, you know, there's still this sort of public debate about is climate change real, and you know, how's it going to affect me? Whereas in other parts of the world, they're well beyond those sorts of questions, right? They're already experiencing the impacts. And so it's more a case of how do we deal with this reality? And so what I hope students get out of my lectures and hopefully out of a podcast like this and their own thinking and researching about climate change is that yes, there's a very serious problem, and it's getting bigger and it's accelerating with every passing year, but there are also many opportunities and solutions that are out there. I know that the two of you are really interested in issues related to plastic pollution, which is accelerating and is growing exponentially around the world. And in many cases, we use plastic in instances when we don't need to, when there's perfectly good substitutes for it. And so whether it's packaging material, whether it's, materials that we build things out of, there's lots of substitutes, bioplastics, and also just simply reduction of waste in the first place. So there's a lot of solutions. And in many cases, the reason we have the problem in the first place is we're kind of stuck in old ways and we're resistant to change. So I hope that in my teaching, when I'm working with undergraduate students, that it inspires them to become innovators and to not get so worried about the problem. Well, they should worry about it, but more importantly, worry about what are the solutions and how can we solve these things. So, and I know that the two of you have been involved in these sorts of things for a while now. And that's what I hope that students can take from not just my own courses, but from coming to university and studying the environment more generally.
For sure.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, and I think like Lauren could speak to it a little bit too. Like she was involved in with like my 4 years at Laurier. I definitely still got a good flavor for what's going on with climate change, and it definitely inspired me. But I think I actually got a lot of inspiration from when my sister was involved with Enactus, as we currently are, and just their efforts that they put towards a lot of social issues, but climate change being a primary focus. And it's incredible when you come to some of these events and you see like schools all over the world coming together to create, again, like these really innovative solutions. And like you said, again, it is a pretty daunting issue and it's going to take a lot of time and effort to really turn things around, but there are a lot of solutions and there are new things that we can discover. So just, you know, putting it towards that effort to actually make that impact, that's really inspiring.
And one thing to add as well, kind of like what you were saying with university in general, it's kind of an area where students can learn and explore kind of new topics such as climate change. For people that don't go to university or aren't necessarily exposed to learning about different things, what sources or areas can people go to get resources or information? Do you recommend like articles or books? Kind of like what would your suggestion be for that sense?
Yeah, that's great. A great question. I mean, one place I'd like to get my information from is reputable newspapers. Most of the big newspapers here in Canada, we have the Globe and Mail, for example, but also the Toronto Star. If you're out in Vancouver, the Vancouver Sun, Montreal Gazette, and so on. The New York Times, obviously, is a good source, the Washington Post, and overseas, the Guardian website from the UK. These are reputable websites run by newspapers that have reliable information about the environment and that have dedicated reporters who report on climate change issues, and they write for a broad audience. So that's a good way to make sure you're getting reliable information that you can trust, but that's also sort of real time. So for example, we're doing this interview in early May 2020. Just a few days ago, there was an article in The Guardian about how projections of future sea level rise we're probably understating or underestimating what those are going to be. And that's based on a scholarly article, but also a reporter interviewing the authors of that article. And that article queried over 100 climate scientists who work on sea level rise. And so essentially what they're saying is, we hear government reporting about how fast the sea level is rising, but it's probably lower than what's really happening. And so by the end of the century, it's probably going to be quite a bit higher. So that's an example of how a student who's interested in diving into these issues can get reliable information, because Lord knows just because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's true. But can sort of get involved or get more knowledgeable about the subject. But there's other ways as well. And obviously an organization that you mentioned like Enactus, the people who are involved in that, the social networks that are built around that, those are people that you can trust their opinions, can trust their views and so on. And you don't have to worry about that you're dealing with some sort of spammer or some other a troll or some other thing on the internet. They're like-minded people who are working in the same direction. So I would encourage people to join those types of social networks. And on campuses right across North America, there are student groups who are dedicated to the environment. At Laurier, we have the Eco Hawks, we have the Naturalist Club, we have Enactus. So there's lots of groups where you have like-minded people coming together. And a lot of that learning happens from peer to peer.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree with that too. I think like starting, getting information from reputable sources is a great starting point, but then you really have to immerse yourself in the networks that are available to actually spark discussions and really
start a movement.
Yeah, and get deeper into like what's going on to really initiate change. Like that's something we really pride ourselves on too. Like when we started out this business, a lot of our efforts were just on learning right off the gate. So we spoke with industry experts all throughout the plastic industry within North America. And it actually gave us a lot of insights from like a business sense about how we could iterate our business and go in the right direction. But it also just gave us a way deeper understanding of like the plastic problem, and speaking with people hands-on about what's going on in the industry. It blew us away when we really like let it sink in. So I could just imagine like in all the different niches, if you really are interested in that, that's kind of what we recommend to a lot of our audiences. You know, don't feel overwhelmed. It's a large topic, but if you really feel passionate about something, pick on just that niche, go head on into it and really become an expert in that field. And it's been amazing for us.
Absolutely. I mean, in my first year class at Laurier, shout out to Laurier again, but I realize this podcast is for everybody, not just Laurier students. But in my first year course, about a quarter of the students are actually in the business program or marketing or finance, economics, and so on. And they're taking it as an elective. And one of the messages I always put out to them in particular is, look, it's perfectly okay to want to get rich. In fact, I hope many of you do. Because obviously, you know, you create businesses, you create employment, but you can do that without trashing the environment in the process. In fact, there's probably as many or more opportunities to build wealth in environmentally sustainable ways as compared with the old-fashioned way of doing things that cause environmental damage. So that's something that certainly through Enactus and other networks that you guys have been involved in on campuses, not just here, but across Canada, that's where a lot of the future lies, is getting people plugged into those networks, building careers that are at the same time profitable and build wealth, but at the same time do it in the right way.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And just to build on that again, sorry to just keep going back in on Laurier there, but my sister actually let me know, because I graduated in 2018, but for our new venture, or I guess for upcoming new ventures now, so the full year, first year business like project that you would be doing, they've now made it so you have to have
you focus on one of the 17 sustainable development goals, which I think is probably the best way to do it, because we should be building businesses that are based on these global issues that need to be solved no matter what.
So like a true triple bottom line, where you know you're making money, but at the same time it's really profit making for impact, purpose. Yeah, and you have, and like just making that as a pillar, it says a lot about Laurier as a university, but then it really gets the kids thinking, okay, this is my first major project, but on top of that I have to get my mind to think about some of these social issues and incorporate it in the business. And I think that's the way future. So that's really great to hear. So I guess for time, like, I mean, this is a good kind of window for where we're at. So I think we could kind of wrap it up. We like to end it off as kind of how we want to end it off for a lot of these sessions, with a favorite stat or something recent in the news. I know you kind of alluded to one recently with that article, and I'm fine to use that one, but if you have if you have another one, potentially a statistic or something you kind of want to leave off for the viewers to kind of just blow your mind on climate change kind of thing, that would be great.
Sure. Well, for example, just within the past month, so again, we're talking in April 2020, there's an organization called the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center, IDMC.org is the website, and they just released their statistics for how many people around the world have been displaced by weather-related disasters, so floods, storms, droughts, wildfires, and things like that. They've been tracking those statistics for about a dozen years now. And so the report that came out last month reported the 2019 statistics. And unfortunately, what it shows is that number keeps growing over time. So I think last year there was about 25 million people around the world who were displaced by primarily by extreme storms and floods, but also to a lesser extent, droughts and fires. And so when the type of things that we talked about earlier in this interview, people having to leave their homes because of these events, it's not some over the horizon thing, yeah, some sort of hypothetical event associated with climate change. It's actually happening in many parts of the world right now, especially in parts of South Asia, Southeast Asia, and Sub-Saharan Africa, and in our own hemisphere as well, Central America. there are people right now who have been displaced from their homes by weather and climate-related disasters, and that number is only going to continue to grow in coming years if we do nothing about climate change and greenhouse gas emissions. So the future, in one sense, is already starting to unfold in many parts of the world. So the way that we avoid that from happening in the future, if we don't want to see climate refugees, if we don't want to see millions of people each year, in addition to the existing ones being displaced from their homes, then the time to start working on these issues, reducing our consumption of resources, reducing our greenhouse gas emissions, that has to happen now. Otherwise, we're sort of locking ourselves into a future where climate refugees become a more common phenomenon. Nobody wants that to happen. And certainly we won't hit the sustainable development goals if we don't. So that's maybe not a happy thing to go out on. But again, the key message is it's already happening. So we need to start talking now about solutions to the problem. So hopefully that anybody who listens to this podcast, if they have some good ideas or they want to learn more about the subject, they'll dive into it a little bit more deeply.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, thank you for that.
I think that's a perfect way to kind of tie things off. That was really well said. And I think, obviously, you're in a niche that's definitely unique in the climate thing. That's one of the reasons why Lauren wanted to reach out and speak with you directly on it. So I think...
Another interesting thing, too, is that we sometimes kind of turn a blind eye to topics like that. And probably a lot of people, even myself included, didn't really know that climate refugees, like, existed. Like, I had no idea. So I think even just educating people in that sense will kind of put more urgency to the issue.
And even from, like, an economic sense, too, I think oftentimes... more conservative minded people, that not that they are full out deniers, but those that are kind of on the cusp and not really seeing it as we need to take immediate action, mm-hmm. aren't recognizing these displacements as being economic problems, that it's almost impossible to think of all the different ways that we're going, from an economic sense, we're going to suffer from climate change. I think these types of statistics and these types of studies that are being done really give a whole new perspective that normally you wouldn't have had. So that's awesome. Yes. I really appreciate
it. Thank you so much for sharing that.
So I guess that concludes episode one.
Thank you, Professor McLemon, for your time and for everyone else who was listening to this podcast. If you want to learn more about Last 20, visit us at www.last20.ca. Until next time, stay sustainable.